222-6396. Pinstripe Empire. And he's also an Emmy Award winner for his work on WPIX. Mr. Appel, it's an honor to have you with us. Thanks for coming on the show today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good to be with you. Let me tell you for a second about that music.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the legacies of the years that CBS owned the Yankees. When they bought the club in 1964, a lot of people thought, wow, what's CBS going to bring to the table? And one of the things was the original composition of that song created by a CBS house orchestra.
Wow.
And there's a lyrical version done by the Mitch Miller Singers that goes with that.
Wow. And of course, Mitch Miller has ties. He's from Rochester, New York.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
What a cozy story this turned out to be.
Yes, indeed. Well, Marty, nobody does tradition like the Yankee heroes. You know, going back obviously to the famous Gettysburg Address of baseball with the Lou Gehrig's "Luckiest Man on the Face of the Earth" speech.
Absolutely, and Derek's speech on the last game at the old Yankee Stadium in 2008, which was ad-libbed, as was Gehrig's. Equally momentous and, you know, beautifully delivered. So I think the bar is pretty high for Derek Jeter this weekend.
You, Marty, you worked for Bob Fischel when he was the public relations director, the Yankees media relations director. And one of the great, great days, and I'm a little biased here because this was my player growing up, Mickey Mantle Day in 1969, I mean, was one of the great, great days at Yankee Stadium in terms of honoring Yankee hero. Take us behind the scenes of that day.
Well, there were some things done that day that hadn't been done before, including the little golf cart that drove Mickey around the running track on the full circumference of the field after the ceremonies were over. That was a beautiful moment. That worked out great. Mickey expecting a plaque. He presented one to Mickey, and then Mickey got to the microphone, and he said, well, Joe gave me a plaque, and I think that if I'm going to have one, Joe's got to have one that hangs just a little bit higher than mine. And he presented DiMaggio with a plaque. And when the plaques were installed in the new stadium, in the remodeled stadium in 1976, I was by then the PR director, and I made sure that Joe's hung one inch higher than me, even though you couldn't really see it from afar.
Did you ever tell Mickey that story, that you actually did make sure it was?
Oh, yeah, he loved it. He was so unpretentious about, you know, ceremonial things, and, you know, he didn't really matter. And after the game, I went in the clubhouse and I got a baseball and I mailed it to Mickey in Dallas. And I said, this is the ball that broke your strikeout.
Well, let's move on to Derek Jeter. Speaking of Yankee icons, obviously the greatest shortstop in Yankees history. Taking everything into account, on and off the field, Marty, where does he rank when we start talking about Ruth, Gehrig, DiMaggio, Mantle? Is he close to being on that Mount Rushmore? Is he on that Mount Rushmore?
Well, he'd be number five to me. Yankees are the easiest team to select the four, and it is Ruth, Gehrig, DiMaggio, Mantle, you know, American legends. Jeter has surpassed Yogi Berra to me as the number five guy.
Wow.
Partly because Derek has become not only the face of the Yankees, but really the face of Major League Baseball during this rough period of largely the steroid era. By playing the game clean and with respect and success, obviously, and with dignity, he has meant so much to baseball over this span. It was huge because he came along after the Black Sox scandal and kind of saved baseball. And Jeter, in the same sense, has been, you know, the clean guy during a rough period for the game in terms of steroids. So, yeah, I put him fifth.
Wow. Talking with Marty Appel, longtime Yankees public relations director. He's authored 18 books, including Pinstripe Empire. Marty, what's kept Derek Jeter so grounded? I mean, it's so with the money and the fame and playing in the Big Apple and the championships, it's so easy for a guy's head to explode, but it doesn't seem like that with Derek Jeter.
Well, I do know his parents, and I'll bet you anticipated that I was going there with the answer, but his parents are just terrific, and they they'll always point out when, you know, people compliment them about the job they did raising Derek, what do you think is the first thing they say? They'll talk about their daughter and how well she's turned out, and, you know, they want to have done it. And it was nice to see them on the field when the Tigers honored Derek last week, and they will be on the field this Sunday as well. I'm sure the Yankee fans will give them a terrific ovation.
One of the amazing things, Marty, it seems to me, is when you look, okay, obviously under the spotlight of New York, but times have changed so much, particularly with social media now and people with, you know, camera phones and stuff, and things go viral right away. I mean, we just see it every day on the show. You know, somebody's getting suspended in the NFL, and we're reporting on it, and something's gone viral or whatever. It just amazes me that, you know, despite being in the media capital of the world, and despite the way things have changed, he's been able to avoid any scandal.
It is remarkable. Now, he's not the only guy that's done it, but he's the guy that, you know, the captain in playing at the level of notoriety that he has to have done so well. I mean, the Yankees were in Boston a few weeks ago. My son lives in Boston. My son is walking down Boylston Street, and he snaps a photo with his iPhone of Jeter coming out of Starbucks holding a cup of coffee. And that's how visible the guy is, you know? It's just like... He would be so susceptible to anything going wrong, but nothing has.
Yeah. When you look back at his career and stuff, could you talk a little bit about another class act, Joe Torre, and maybe Joe's influence on him and being maybe the perfect manager for a young Derek Jeter?
Oh, yeah. Can't say enough about that. I mean, it was the perfect pairing of this fatherly-like figure and this guy that was very young to become a regular in the Yankee lineup and find himself in a pennant race in that first year. And Joe, along with the coach Don Zimmer, did an awful lot to keep Jeter focused on the assignment and keep him grounded. And in that sense, they were like surrogate parents for him all that whole rookie season.
And what about George Steinbrenner and that relationship between Derek and he? I know there were a couple of rough times there, and then they had that commercial where they kind of poked fun at it.
The Visa commercial.
Yeah. Visa commercial.
You know, it took a little while for George Steinbrenner to realize that he bought the team in 73, and I didn't realize immediately that he was going to become a national figure and have such celebrity himself. He was just my new boss and the guy that owned the team, and it was a little while until I realized the enormity of him. So sometimes these things sneak up on you.
Marty, you did a best-selling book on Thurman Munson. Actually, wrote two books on Thurman and got to know him. And tell us the story, the behind-the-scenes story about Thurman being named captain. You had a little role in that.
I did have a little role in that. Before the 1976 season, we had a big meeting at the Carlisle Hotel on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. With every Mr. Steinbrenner said, and I remember the words exactly. He said, "Now, Billy, this is up to you. It's not me dictating it to you, but I think sometimes it's good to have a captain on the team, and it's not always the most famous guy. It's the guy who can exhibit the best leadership, and I'd love for you to think about having Thurman Munson be the captain of the team this year." So that's when I was still in my 20s, but I was the guy in the room who kind of knew the most history of the club because I'd been living it since I was a kid. So at that point, I spoke up and I said, "Mr. Steinbrenner, is this piece of Yankee history where when Lou Gehrig died as captain in 1941, Joe McCarthy said there will never be another Yankee captain. He's retiring the position with the death of Lou Gehrig." And Steinbrenner, like, paused for a moment, and then he brilliantly said, "Well, if Joe McCarthy knew Thurman Munson, he'd know this was the right guy for the job, and this is the right time to do it."
That's brilliant.
And I don't think Billy...
And, you know, the Yankees, like you said, they don't always have a captain. In fact, they won those four World Series in the 90s. Derek Jeter wasn't the captain until 2003. I mean, do you think the Yankees actually might retire that position? Because I don't know if the younger Steinbrenners would ever want to, like, name another captain. I don't see anybody coming up who carried Derek Jeter's shoes.
Well, the truth is, a lot of people say to me, "Is nobody in sight? Who's going to be the face of this franchise?" And my response to that is, nobody saw Don Mattingly coming.
Right. Mm.
Sometimes these things just happen.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Marty? I see some parallels here. This appears that we're coming on a fallow time here. You know, the farm system hasn't been producing a lot of players, and that's being kind. Do you see some similarities between this and, you know, those latter years of Mickey Mantle, and then there was a little bit of a lull there?
Because it's still rolling the dice. No matter how good they are in the minor leagues, you still don't know how they're going to do in the majors. Better to trade them for guys that you have a pretty good idea how they're going to do in the majors because they're established. So that was his philosophy, and some liked it and some didn't, but it was a philosophy. And I think the same thing could happen now. The Yankees could trade a bunch of their guys, that have been playing okay in the minor leagues, come up with a Paul O'Neill or something like that that we don't see coming, and everything turns around on the fortunes of a couple of guys. It could still happen.
Mm-hmm. But it's pretty unlikely that we're going to see a core four, really a core five, because everybody forgets Bernie Williams in this whole thing. But that was such an extraordinary crop of prospects who
came off. It's been repeated now frequently, and I did include it in Pinstripe Empire, but the Yankees came close to getting an infielder named Felix Fermin from the Seattle Mariners in 96 because not everybody in the Yankee front office believed that Derek Jeter was quite ready in 96 to play shortstop every day at the major leagues. Some thought he'd need another year in the minors. But Gene Michael and others felt that he was ready, and so a potential trade for Felix Fermin, which might have sent Mariano Rivera to Seattle, never happened. And had Felix Fermin come to New York and had a career year, they might have traded Jeter. So
wow.
Look at how these things can unfold.
Sometimes it's just better to be lucky than smart. Well,
yeah,
or in that
absolutely.
Case, dumb. So, Marty, we could talk to you all day. We really appreciate it. But thank you so much for coming on, and we look forward to talking to you again toward the end of the season. We really appreciate you coming on and doing this with us. Thank you so much.
Anytime.